It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that is safe, secure, and easy to use. There are some early college football futures that we're eyeing because of the great advice from our Cover 3 guys. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/247 and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Welcome in to the Autzen Audibles podcast. Matt Preem, Jared Mack on the show. Welcome to your Monday edition mailbag. We've got some good questions. We divvied it down to 4 or 5. So there's going to be a lot to discuss, a lot of recruiting. We're going to have some basketball, which digs into some basketball recruiting as well. And also just the upcoming football season. Jared, let's start first with Robbie Parnes's question. Is there a position in the 2023 class that you think the Ducks need to sign an immediate impact player? And who are some of the top targets, and where do the Ducks stand with that question? Let's first address the first part of it. Where would this team need to sign an immediate player in 2023?
I think there's a couple of spots. Specifically, if you just look at who's to graduate or who's to go to the NFL draft in the following season, I think defensive line and offensive line could really be a place where they need immediate help. So, like, just a couple ideas, but Samson Okunlola for out of Massachusetts, he's a 5-star high offensive tackle. He's visited Oregon this season. I think he could be an immediate impact guy. He's got the size and the strength. Offensive line, I think, to me, is a little easier to find someone who could be an immediate impact than defensive line. Unless you're like Kayvon Thibodeau, but that's like, you know, he's a top 5.
That guy's not out there.
Right. That guy doesn't come around too often. But, you know, you saw it with Penei Sewell, and you saw it even with Steven Jones that same year, both guys true freshmen. I think you'll get a chance to see it this season with Josh Connerly Jr. I don't know if he'll be – I don't think he'll be a starter, but I think he can make an impact on the team as just being a role guy and providing depth. So that's a name. As far as, like, a defensive end goes, you know, this is – the West Coast doesn't have its greatest talents in terms of defensive ends or offensive line prospects. You could look at somebody like – Mateo Uyunglele, he's a guy, he's, you know, top 10 player in the country. Last time I checked, he's somebody who could probably give you an immediate boost. Another guy, both from the West Coast, Jaden Wayne. I think he could probably be somebody who makes an immediate contribution to the team, but neither one of them are to the point of like a Kayvon Thibodeau type of player. And that's not a bad thing necessarily, no. But I just think that those are the positions that Oregon probably needs to address in the offseason in terms of finding an impact player. And those are just a few names that I could think of.
Ungele and Wayne, I feel like their freshman years, they'll be specialty players. Like, hey, we've seen it before. This may be a guy that doesn't hit your radar. But Kenny Rowe, when he showed up as a freshman, he was just a pure pass rush specialist, or a Devin Long, same situation. And when their careers ended, they were, you know, 3 or 4 down defensive linemen. Deion Jordan was another one early on in his career, just a special, you know, pass rush type guy. That's how I look at Ungele and Wayne, is that I don't know if it's best, you know, particularly pass rush, but they feel like as freshmen, like, they'll be really good at one thing, and they won't be really good at multiple things. And that's kind of what made Kayvon Thibodeau so good. I mean, he was really, really good as a pass rusher, but he was also, as a freshman, pretty good against the run still. I went with a different position. I think it's cornerback, defensive back. There's not a lot of depth here in 2022, and they're going to lose a couple guys. I mean, they might see Christian Gonzalez go pro. You know, he's going to be a draft eligible sophomore. Bennett Williams and Jamal Hill could also be gone. We know Bennett Williams will be because he's using his extra year of eligibility. Jamal Hill, I think he will be in school for 4 or 5 years now. He could be a draft eligible guy. So I look at him and I look at that defensive backfield and think their numbers are already low. And maybe Tucker and Florence show up and Kamari Terrell show up and they're really good. Maybe Addison and Steve Stevens kind of, you know, push their way into that safety room where you feel real confident about them being on campus next year as stars. But I think right now, secondary, that's a spot where you could really need to add a couple guys. And, you know, they've been able to sign – or not sign, but they've been able to land Cole Martin, a four-star cornerback. I think that's a good start. And then it's Caleb Presley from Seattle. Can you get him to really take a hard look at you? And I know he's high on Oregon, but can they make the move to become the top school there? There's a couple guys back east or in, you know, the Southwest. Javier Antovino, most importantly from Martin High School in Arlington, Texas. That's another guy that's got some good interest in Oregon. And then, you know, Roderick Pleasant from California. Dalen Austin just recently included Oregon in his top group. So you've got some names there, but I really like to see them try and find a couple impact guys right away. And it might be a portal. That might be a way to go is for both our positions, Jared, portal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the portal is like – it can be a luxury, I guess, when if you miss on a couple prospects of a certain position group and then you really need some depth, you can always go after and go hunting in the portal. I think that's what Oregon kind of did with wide receiver and bringing in Chase Cota, a little bit with cornerback too and bringing in Christian Gonzalez. But yeah, cornerback, specifically safety, was my third option on like what position group needs to bring someone in, because yeah, they do lose a lot of kids. They could be losing Hill, Bennett Williams, Steve Stevens, and Brian Addison, just depending on if those players have good years or if they, frankly, if they don't want to do school anymore, which I completely understand. So that'd be four guys right there. And unless JJ Greenfield, you know, shows that he's capable and deserving of a scholarship, which he's been showing so far in his, you know, and at least during spring camp. It's a position that's going to need a lot of players to come in at. And my only, safety is not the hardest position to recruit well at, I think. And I think Coach Powell is an excellent recruiter. And
yeah,
but he will have his work cut out for him. And that's certainly what's going to happen.
I'm going to call an audible here and let's go to the next question because it ties into this, I think, a little bit. Ross Maislich, I think I pronounced his name correctly. He asks, which coach on Oregon staff do you think needs to do the best job on the recruiting trail in the 2023 class, given their state of their position group? That kind of goes right into Matt Powledge in the safeties room, because like you said, Bennett's gone after this season. Jamal Hill could go pro. And then Addison and Stevens, I think, are in their fifth years of college right now. Do they want to?
I think so, yeah. Fourth officially.
Yeah, fourth. So do they want to come back for a fifth year, potentially a sixth year, 2 years down the road? Like you just said, that creates a lot of pressure of needing to find guys. It wouldn't be surprising to me if we see the defensive back position hit the portal next season. Try and load up on high school guys and then try and add one or maybe even two portal guys to that group as well. I think Matt Pallage is one. I'll let you give your answer, and then I'll have another name that I think has done a good job already in this area.
Yeah, I think Matt Pallage is probably my obvious number one answer to this. I think it really depends on what you find to be like the most important recruiting position group that it, like you think needs to come in for next year. You could look at this and be like, well, Kenny Dillingham needs to have a good offseason because they need to have a quarterback, or Dan Lanning and Tosh Lupoy need to have a good offseason because they need to find defensive linemen, whatever the case may be. But yeah, I think more specifically, I think it's secondary. I think it's Pallage and Coach Demetrius Martin. I think those guys have the most limited amount of depth. I'd throw Junior Adams in there as well, because wide receiver room, like as talented as it could be, there's still, you know, not a lot of depth at all over there. I think this is going to be an important offseason, most specifically towards Coach Martin and Coach Powell. It's just because of the depth. They have a lot of talent at their position group, like with Dante Manning and Christian Gonzalez. You bring in the Jaleels from Lincoln High School in San Diego. Avante Dickerson was a high star recruit coming out of high school. Even Kamari Terrell, who's more of a project, you know, there's a lot of potential in him at corner. But I just listed basically everybody who plays the position, which is not a lot of people. And you know, as is Darren Barkins, he plays there. And now I've listed everybody who does play there. So it's Coach Martin, Coach Pallage are going to need like the biggest offseason possible to try to replenish the talent that will be lost and that they don't have right now in those rooms.
The guy I'm going with has already kind of answered the bell here, and that's Carlos Lachlan, Oregon's running back coach. He assumed the job. He had 1 or 2 years of full-time on-field experience previously at Western Kentucky. They obviously did lead the country in rushing this past season or right there near the top. That matters a little bit. But his hire, it was certainly one of those, who is this? I don't know who he is. Right. He doesn't have a track record. I mean, obviously he worked in an assistant role, off-field role at Memphis. He also did that at Florida State, but he was never a full-time position coach. He's been linked to multiple guys in the NFL as a assistant's assistant coach, but never in his own position. And he's answered the call tremendously. I mean, he assumed a running back room that, what, when spring ball started, they had three guys. And one of them was coming off a massive injury in Sean Dollars. So, like, the numbers there at running back were not good. And all that Oregon has done since spring ball has started, it has had Noah Whittington. They've landed the verbal commitment from Dante Dadao, which happened this past weekend. And then they've also gone into the portal at the end of spring, and they added Marquise Irving, a Minnesota running back, who is a four-star transfer. So I think Carlos Lachlan early on, like, we haven't seen on-field success yet, and that matters some. Matters a lot, I should say. But in the offseason, I think Carlos Lachlan has done a really good job of reshaping the running back room and being able to kind of stock the cupboard a little bit.
Oh, certainly. Just exactly like you put out. They had two major running backs in Cardwell and Sean Dollars. And then after that, it, you know, becomes a question mark after losing, you know, Trey Benson and a lot of others and Travis Dye in the offseason. You almost lost Sean Dollars too. So yeah. That gives that's another credit to Dan Lanning and Lachlan as a whole. And then, you know, bringing on Marquise Irving and Noah Whittington out of the transfer portal is big. Whittington was on Western Kentucky last year, which I read that Dante Dowdell, his stepfather, what he said about Western Kentucky leading the country and rushing. That's just not true. They led the country in passing offense. They had just a million yards per game, 440 yards of passing offense a game, but only like 110 yards in the rushing. But that's just their offensive style. I'm sure Carlos Lachman is a tremendous coach and should have on-field success as well. But we watched DeWittington a lot during spring camp as the number three or number two or number one running back, depending on whatever group he was in. And he certainly looks the part to play Power Five football. He's a little shorter than Cardwell and Dollars, but he's still built well. He runs hard. You know, he had that 41 or 42 yard run in the spring game. I thought he looked explosive all spring long. Marquise Irving, the transfer out of Minnesota, he had 699 yards or 700 yards as a true freshman in Minnesota. He runs really well. He reminds me of Travis Dye in the way that he runs, really slippery, shifty, whatever you want to call it. To get him is huge. And then recruiting-wise, Jordan James, Dante Dowdell, those are two four-star running backs from the South, too. Let's be clear. Mississippi and Georgia. So that potential pipeline that I think everybody kind of dreamed about when they realized that Lanning was coming to Oregon maybe hasn't happened on the defense side of the ball yet, but offensively with Lachlan and his connections down there, he's already putting in the work. He wanted those two guys and he went out and got them. At the time, Jordan James was, you know, all the 24/7 sports crystal ball predictions were to Georgia. He commits to Oregon. For Dowdell, all the crystal balls were for Ole Miss. He commits to Oregon. I think Carlos Lachlan's done a fantastic job so far and has really shown something out of the running back position coach that, you know, we haven't seen in a couple of years.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap up this mailbag with two other questions on football and also on basketball.
Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. Not only is Bluehost Cloud our fastest web hosting available, but it's also built for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you can get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
All right, welcome back to the Odds and Audibles podcast. Jared, choose your podcast adventure here. Do we want to go basketball first, or do you want to go football first?
Let's do football first. We'll finish off with the basketball.
Okay, so Niles PDX tweets, TJ, his name is TJ, it looks like. In your opinion, what would make this football season a disappointment? Less than 9 wins? Question mark. I think if Oregon won 8 games in the regular season and then got to a bowl game and won that for their 9th, I think I would come off the press box and interviews and start writing. And I feel like I would be a little disappointed, but the fact that they won the bowl game on, you know, they end the year with a win maybe kind of carries me over a little bit. If they go into a bowl game with 9 wins and they lose, it's probably a bad feeling. So I think that 9 win mark is kind of the benchmark, and it's almost kind of depends on how you get there. I don't know. I think expecting like 11 wins might be a little crazy. That's a lot of things going your way. Kind of best case scenario. I don't think it's fair to expect that. 10 feels kind of like what you should do with this offense. But depending on how you get to 9, I might feel okay with anything below that, though. I would feel, man, they had a wasted year of opportunity.
This is it's a tough one for me because 9 wins is a good season, but we haven't seen any of this on the field yet. And I think what Matt brought up is like how you get there. I think that's a good recognition. In September when Oregon plays Georgia and then BYU, and like, you know, in 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever it is, I think that'll be a true test. I think the Georgia game is something to consider. If it goes well, yeah. If it doesn't, then it may be like a bury the tape game. But this is certainly a talented team. It's still, mind you, under a first-year head coach, a quote-unquote like first-year play calling offensive coordinator, if you want to believe that. There's a lot of first-timers here. It's talented, but there are still a lot of question marks. There's still question marks on the offense and how they perform against a team that isn't their own. Defensively, I feel like there's less question marks, but there's still a lack of depth at corner and safety. Injuries on both sides of the ball can always permit other questions to be asked. So it's hard for me to say that 9 wins would be disappointing.
Right.
I think for the last couple of years, it's been like that's been the barometer of success, especially under Mario Cristobal and other than the 2020 shortened season, where I think, I don't know, would you consider the 2020 season disappointing?
No. Kind of. I mean, they won the league. They
won the league on sort of a technicality.
It's true. But they still won the league.
This is true.
I don't know. I think 2020 is kind of a lot like what I was describing with how you get to 9 wins. Like,
yeah.
They got destroyed in the Fiesta Bowl, which really stunk and left a sour taste in your mouth. But they won the league, but like you said, on a technicality. I don't know. I don't know how I would define 2020. Maybe a minor shade over to disappointment?
Maybe. It's tough to say it like right about now because even 2021, like, was that a success? I mean, they still won double-digit football games. They're still one of the few teams, frankly, in the country to do that. I mean, but, you know, they got wiped in against Oklahoma and against Utah twice. So it's like, yeah. Is that a disappointment? So to answer the question, sure, 9 wins is probably like the over-under of like a disappointing season or not. It's just a hard thing to answer, in my opinion. Like at this stage of the season,
I could create a scenario where things go bad for Oregon early on, and yet I feel like they walk off the field at the end of the season feeling good. Because what if they do? You brought up the BYU game as a potential loss. Like, what if they do lose to Georgia? They do lose to BYU 2 weeks later. And then maybe on October 8th, they go to Arizona and they get upset by Arizona. And so now all of a sudden, we're looking at a 3-3 Oregon team going into the bye week in the middle of October. But they rattle off, let's just say, 6 straight wins. They get to the conference championship game. They win that one, and then they lose in their bowl game. And now all of a sudden, we're talking about a team that's 9-4, or they'd be 10-4
mm-hmm.
on the season. They have 4 losses, but they won 7 of their last 8 games to close out the season. They have double-digit wins.
It'd be the reverse of 2020.
Yeah.
21, excuse me.
Yeah. And so, like, you could have – I mean, this is a tough question to answer, and it's a good one because
there's so many different paths you could take to a good season or to a bad season. I mean, I think all of us would agree that, hey, if they don't get to a bowl game, like, or if they get to like 6-7 wins, that's a disappointment. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter how you get to 7 wins. If you lose your first 5 and win your final 7, like, yeah, you won 7 in a row, but what the hell happened to lose 5 straight games? Like, 7 feels really bad, but you could argue like 9, 8, 10 wins, they could be good seasons and they could also be disappointments.
I think it all depends on how they start. I think it's exactly like the 2021 season. You know, last year Oregon beats Ohio State, and what was it? The first college football rank power or playoff rankings, Oregon was number 4. And that completely changes the expectation and the course of the season. By me, by you, by the fans, by the nation. Because once they see that Oregon O light up at 4, that's different. Then that is the expectation. So they could have gone – last year they could have gone like 11-2 and won the Rose Bowl, but finished 5th in the country like they did in 2019. But the fact that they were there, number 4 for a moment, people might have looked at that as a disappointment. So I think it's all in the eyes of the beholder, but I will say Dan Lanning and company, if they finish the season and they're 9-4 at the end of it all, I think that's a good year. I think they should be pleased with that. I think Oregon fans should be pleased with that, especially considering the fact that, Mario leaving kind of came out of left field. It all really happened in like a 72-hour time frame. They lost 14 players. They added 9. It's a new coaching staff. It's a new coaching staff, like I was saying earlier, where there's a lot of first-timers on the staff. I think all things considered and how the trajectory of what the recruiting looks like and the people that they have for recruiting on their staff, I think that would be viewed as a successful season as if they win 9 games.
All right, let's transition over to the last question we got from Kevin, March Madness 83 on Twitter. Since Dior Johnson signed, my expectations have cooled after seeing recent film interviews, Jordan Brand game. Nice he's trying out for Team USA, but 24/7 Sports agrees after dropping him 21 spots in the final rankings. Fan expectations still seem high. Is anyone else concerned? # Odds and Audibles. We should note, a couple months ago, Dior Johnson was a 5-star, was in the 20s. For the national rankings, he is now taking a hit and is 45th overall. Still really good. Still a really good ranking. Top 50 player in the country, but he's no longer a 5-star. He's no longer a composite 5-star either. 24/7 Sports has him 45th. The composite has him 36th. So our network is a little bit lower on Dior than the rest of the industry. And this has been kind of a trend for Dior over the last 2 or 3 years during his high school recruitment. He has dropped a little bit every ranking. He was at one point a top 10 player and no longer the case, was once viewed as a first round draft pick. I don't know if that's still the case or not, but he's still a top 50 player. So what's a fair expectation for Dior Johnson in 2022 at Oregon? Jared, first of all, let's see if this might be speaking out of turn here a little bit, but he's gone to 7 or 8 high schools in his career. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you've got straight A's at all of those schools. That many transfers is going to create some work for the compliance and for the admissions department at Oregon to get him into school. So I do think there is a little bit of let's hope the transcripts all transfer over. Let's hope he's got all the credits necessary to enroll at Oregon. I think that is the first hurdle to clear. Oregon seems confident he'll get in. I don't think they would have recruited him if they didn't think he would, but that's option, that's hurdle one. I don't think even if Will Richardson doesn't come back for a 5th year, I don't think Dior is automatically starting. And I've tried to set those expectations on the board.
I mean, yeah, I don't think he'll be starting either. He's a freshman, and although Dana has played freshmen a lot in the past, which is always a good thing, I think. Yes, he's got to prove it. It's as simple as that. I think the high school transfers and enrolling in Oregon and getting in, I think that's a legitimate issue. We saw there was the same smoke and same buzz around Seven McGee because he did very similar things. We also saw the same recruiting ranking development happen with Seven McGee.
Yep.
I think
that's a good comparison.
Yeah. Because Seven McGee did the same thing. I don't know if he went to as many high schools as Dior, because it does seem like Dior is a two a year guy. But you know, Seven McGee was, I don't remember off the top of my head, but he was a very high 4-star at one point. He might've even been a 5-star. And the same with Dior, but once they start transferring schools, that means you're not playing as much football or basketball. And Dior wasn't playing as much basketball, and he wasn't as seen as other top prospects. So it's hard to keep this kid in the same place when you know that other people are seemingly just as good, even though you're not seeing Dior play, so they drop him. And I think that's probably what happened to Dior. I still think he's a very talented player. I do think that he will certainly make a push to become a starting point guard to start the season. He's 6'3", 180. He's like a very prototypical point guard mold for Dana Altman defense and offense. I still think he's a very talented player. And I still think he can make an immediate impact with him and Khalil Ware. But it's just going to be, I think that first hurdle of him enrolling and getting into school, I think it's going to be big. And I think that's going to be what is going to put a hold on all of this if he doesn't get in, because, well, he can't go to Oregon. But I think reasonable expectations is for him to earn the starting job at some point. And if he doesn't, I think he's going to be the first guard off the bench.
Yeah.
I think he'll be potentially the leading scorer of the bench unit, just as a guy who's capable of creating his own shot. But once basketball season rolls around and if he's on the team, I'm really interested to see how he develops to the college level, because at high school, you know, I'm sure people who are listening have watched his highlights. He was one of a 5-star. He seemed like an unstoppable player at points. And you see that too often, and then the guard doesn't do anything at the college level. So I'm interested to see if he can bring some of that skill set into college.
I'm with you. I think the expectation is he competes for a starting job, but ultimately in the end, he becomes kind of your sixth man, your microwave off the bench.
That'd be really good.
And, you know, I think I'm taking into account here, maybe Will Richardson coming back. I mean, Richardson's not in the transfer portal. He did not get an invite into the G League combine. And the NBA drafts combine. So, you know, things would suggest it's better for Will to come back to school. And he's not in the portal, so he'd have to get a waiver to go somewhere else at Oregon or be a grad transfer. But I don't know if he's graduated yet or not. But let's just assume Will is back. I just think Will, Bartholomew, and Cousinard, plus the JUCO, Tyrone Williams, and you know, those four are kind of locked in my eyes as kind of your three guys to start. And I don't look at Dior as the same level as the three college players. Tyrone probably equal there. And that's where, you know, I think the expectation is. Is he going to beat out Tyrone to be the number one guard off the bench? Or could Tyrone take that job? But I think he's going to play. He'll play in every game unless injuries happen or something off the court happens, which wouldn't be expected. But I think the expectation is he plays. He plays major minutes. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me the slightest if he maybe starts a handful of games in 2022. I'd be real curious to see what his mindset is like. And if NIL at Oregon can help keep him at Oregon for more than one season, because he feels a lot like a Tyler Dorsey, where from an impact perspective, good enough to potentially start if need be. I don't think Oregon's roster is at that part where they need him to start.
No.
But he's good enough to start if need be. And then his sophomore year, you see a huge explosion in production. And I just really wonder, like, could that be kind of Dior's path of be a two and out guy, and your sophomore year, you really elevate yourself?
Yeah, I mean, that would be wonderful if he were a two and out guy. But I do kind of feel like Oregon, with the way they're recruiting grad transfers and Bartholomew and Cousinard, and I feel like they're almost anticipating a Will Richardson not return, because those are like two other ball handlers who can take over for like a quote unquote a point guard role. Right. But we'll see eventually. I don't know. But yeah, if Dior Johnson were to stay for a second year, that's a stacked team. That's Dior at point. That's Mookie Cook at the three, potentially a Kwame Evans at the four. For number five, that could be a Nate Biddle in his junior season. We'll see what he's up to by the end of next year. Tyrone Williams as your two guard. That's a good starting five. That's a very, very talented starting five. But I agree with you to the point where, you know, if Dior does stay for a second year, that could be his breakout season. We've seen that a lot with point guards. That's happened to, I mean, I know he transferred with like Javon Quinterly at Alabama. You know, he really struggled coming in as a five-star at Villanova, didn't get a lot of playing time, goes to Alabama, sits out a year, and then just plays really well, helps lead him to a tournament. I'm not saying Dior has to transfer to get better, but I do think that a sophomore season, you know, learning the college speed of the game, gaining good weight, just figuring out what he is good, what he's really good at college and what he's not so good at is important, working on a shot. Just like all the things that a freshman basketball player has to do to get better. Yeah. A sophomore surgence like a Dorsey definitely could be the case.
All right, that's going to do it for us here on the Odds and Audibles podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for submitting your questions. I think for the first time in 3 weeks, or maybe even 4 weeks, on Monday of next week, all three of us will be back. Unless, Jared, did you put in a vacation that we don't know about?
Oh, well, not really. I am going to the Pac-12 baseball tournament next Monday. So.
Oh, all right. Well,
so it'll be you and Eric.
There we go. So you'll have another week with just two of us on the podcast. All three of us will get on here eventually, shortly, but you'll have to wait another week until that comes out. Until then, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Peace.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls.
Rated PG-13.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.